Fra Orlo had noticed how distracted I was and summoned me to the Starhenge shortly before sunset. He'd reserved the telescope of Sons Mithra and Mylax for the night. The weather was cloudy, but in the hope that it would clear up, he had gone there late in the afternoon to aim the telescope and prepare a blank photomnemonic tablet. I found him at the controls of the M&M just as he was finishing these preparations. We went out and strolled along the ring of megaliths. My tongue was a long time in loosening, but after a while I told Orlo of what I'd been feeling and thinking about Cord. He asked all sorts of questions I'd never have thought of and listened carefully to my answers, all of which seemed to confirm in his mind that I wasn't feeling anything about her that was inappropriate for a Sib. Orlo reminded me that Cord was all the biological family I had left, not to mention the only person I really knew from Extramuros, and assured me that it was normal and healthy for me to think about her a lot. I told him about the conversations I'd been having lately that called into question all kinds of things about the discipline and the reconstitution. He assured me that this was an unwritten tradition of Apert. This was a time for the Avow to get all of that out of their systems so that they did not have to spend the next 10 years worrying about it. He slowed and stopped as we rounded the northeastern limb.
"Did you know that we live in a beautiful place?" he asked.
"How could I not know it?" I demanded. "Every day I go into the minster, I see the chancel, we sing the anathem."
"Your words say yes, your defensive tone says something else," Orlo said. "You haven't even seen this."
And he gestured to the northeast. The range of mountains leading off in that direction was obscured during winter by clouds and during summer by haze and dust. But we were between summer and winter now. The previous week had been hot, but temperatures had fallen suddenly on the second day of Apert, and we had plumped our bolts up to winter thickness. When I had entered the Presidium a couple of hours earlier, it had been storming, but as I descended the stair, the roar of the rain and the hail had gradually diminished. By the time I had found Orlo up top, nothing remained of the storm except for a few wild drops hurtling around on the wind like rocks in space, and a foam of tiny hailstones on the walkway. We were almost in the clouds. The sky had hurled itself against the mountains like a sea attacking a stony headland, and spent its cold energy in half an hour. The clouds were dissolving, yet the sky did not get any brighter because the sun was going down. But Orlo, with his cosmographer's eye, had noted on the flank of a mountain a stretched patch that was brighter than the rest. When I first saw what he was pointing at, I guessed that hail had silvered the boughs of trees in some high vale. But as we watched, the color of it warmed. It broadened, brightened, and crept up the mountainside, setting fire to individual trees that had changed color early. It was a ray coming through a gap in the weather far to the west, levering up as the sun sank.
"That is the kind of beauty I was trying to get you to see,"
Orlo told me.
"Nothing is more important than that you see and love the beauty that is right in front of you. Or else you will have no defense against the ugliness that will hem you in and come at you in so many ways."
From Fra Orlo, of all people, this was an astonishingly poetic and sentimental remark. I was so startled that it didn't occur to me to wonder what Orlo was referring to when he spoke of the ugliness. At least my eyes were open, though, to what he wanted me to see. The light on the mountain became rich in hues of crimson, gold, peach, and salmon. Over the course of a few seconds, it washed the walls and towers of the millenarian math with a glow that if I were a deolator, I'd have called holy and pointed to as proof that there must be a god.
"Beauty pierces through like that ray through the clouds," Orlo continued. "Your eye is drawn to where it touches something that is capable of reflecting it, but your mind knows that the light does not originate from the mountains and the towers. Your mind knows that something is shining in from another world. Don't listen to those who says it's in the eye of the beholder."
By this, Orlo meant the Fras of the New Circle and the old reformed Faunites. but he could just as well have been Telenes, warning Ophid not to be seduced by Svenic demagogues. The light lingered on the highest parapet for a minute, then faded. Suddenly all before us was deep greens, blues, and purples.
"It'll be good seeing tonight," Orlo predicted.
"Will you stay?"
"No, we must go down. We're already in trouble with the Master of the Keys. I must go fetch some notes."
Orlo hustled away and left me alone for a minute. I was surprised by a little sunrise above the mountains. The ray, sweeping invisibly up through empty sky, had found a couple of small, wispy clouds and set them alight, like balls of wool flung into a fire. I looked down into the dark consent and felt no desire to jump. Seeing beauty was going to keep me alive. I thought of Cord and the beauty that she had, in the things she made, the way she carried herself, the emotions that played on her face while she was thinking. In the consent, beauty more often lay in some theoric proof, a kind of beauty that was actively sought and developed. In our buildings and music, beauty was always present, even if I didn't notice. Orlo was onto something. When I saw any of those kinds of beauty, I knew I was alive. And not just in the sense that when I hit my thumb with a hammer, I knew I was alive, but rather in the sense that I was partaking of something. Something was passing through me that it was in my nature to be a part of. This was both a good reason not to die and a hint that death might not be everything. I knew I was perilously close to Deolator territory now, but because people could be so beautiful, it was hard not to think that there was something of people that came from the other world that Canoas had seen through the clouds.